RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Feisty Friday on the Dark Delight podcast with
Stiff Neck Val.
What'd you do to yourself?
I don't know. It's not the worst stiff neck I ever had, but I woke up and there's just a little something going on there.
Gross.
And beans.
Yes, and beans. Did you catch what I just did?
Eat or drink something? I consider myself Chewbacca to your Han Solo. If you want to piss people off, it's up to you. If they're not going to come down on me.
I was only trying to piss you off, actually, but it's okay.
Oh, but Friday's here again.
Friday's here. Very, very crazy last couple days. Like, the energy in the air is just insane.
Oh, I'm going insane.
Me too.
The insanity has definitely bitten deep.
What do you think it is?
Everything is cyclical. I try to point out cycles wherever they pop up, and there's a number of cycles that we're in, and this is just one of them where there seems to be a lull. It's almost like the good guys are stuck in a doldrum with no wind to beat against their sails, and the bad guys are being given free and open rein to put out and set up all of their defenses, layers of defenses, no matter how desperate and how pathetic these ploys may be, whether they be new investigations or the contempt charge or, you know, not reading the Mueller report and just playing stupid because they know they're trying to pander to stupid people. I mean, just the fact that they're being given a chance to go out there and build their sandcastle is infuriating to me because, you know, I don't know. I can't stand watching undisciplined children go without being disciplined.
I get that analysis of it. I think a little differently than you. I think that we're experiencing all this right now because things are about to blow and there's a frantic
Yeah. I hope that's what's behind it. I feel that that's what's behind it. But mm-hmm. Still, I can't stand watching undisciplined children run roughshod over the beach. I can't stand it.
Yeah, it kind of makes you sick, right?
Sick to my stomach.
I agree with you. I'm feeling the same way. But it's not because I don't think justice is coming. I want to jump right into the breaking news from the past couple of days and talk about it because it has been, you know, on Wednesday's show, Frank, we talked about Ray, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I said, I don't understand why everybody's so angry with Ray about this comment. It wasn't such a big deal. Well, I still believe that, actually. But we had a bunch of stories break in the past couple of days, and I want to piece through them. Citizens United is a not-for-profit, not really a PAC, but it basically raises money to help political issues, and it's run by David Bossie. Do you know who David Bossie is?
The name has popped up, but yeah, I'm glad to get some background right now.
Okay, so David Bossie was the deputy campaign manager underneath Corey Lewandowski. And he wrote that book, Trump's Enemies with Lewandowski, where they sat down with the president for the book and his interviews inside of there. Well, he runs this thing. Yeah, he was his deputy campaign manager in 2016. He also interviewed with Trump for the position of White House Chief of Staff as well. So a couple different things are going on here. Bossie was just recently kind of scolded very strongly by the campaign, the Trump campaign, in a statement about nefarious sort of shaded fundraising, right? Like, basically, it's alleged that they were direct mail was going out, soliciting funds for the presidential coalition they formed, giving an address on Pennsylvania Avenue with an emblem that resembles the president's seal. And Trump took serious issue with that because it appeared as though they were soliciting directly for the president, and right, they weren't. In addition, it appears as though Bossie used $15 million for fundraising, salaries, and purchases of his own book. Hold on 1 second. So it appears as though Bossie was doing some, you know, not so good stuff. He's a tax-exempt 527. And why am I talking about this? Because the Trump campaign came out and read a statement, didn't name Bossie, but it said, there's no excuse for any group, including ones run by people who claim to be a part of our, quote, coalition, to suggest that they directly support President Trump's re-election or any other candidates, when in fact their actions show they're interested in filling their own pockets with money from innocent Americans' paychecks and, sadly, retirements. We encourage the appropriate authorities to investigate all alleged scam groups for potential illegal activities. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, that was harsh, right?
Yeah, talk about pulling no punches, taking a stand against something.
So this Axios report came out on, the original Axios report came out on May 5th, which was Sunday. Yesterday, we got something absolutely bombshell. Citizens United, this same group that has done all these things and the campaign was forced to kind of distance themselves from, had put in a FOIA request about 7 months ago for any records responsive to the deputy director of the State Department in regards to Christopher Steele. And there were responsive records, and they got them, and they broke yesterday. So the timing of all of this to me is very interesting. The responsive records, it was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Kathleen Kavalek. She met with Christopher Steele on October 11th, 2016. And basically, Steele says to her that we're keen to see this information come to light prior to November 8th. She wrote this in a memo and a type summary of the meeting. And then basically Steele gives some other intelligence about some things that were in the dossier. And there were factual inaccuracies in those intelligence briefings that he gave to the State Department. And Kathleen also notes that in her typed up memo, which you guys can all read if you want to go to, a lot of it's redacted, but if you want to go to, if you want to go to the show notes, I have a link to it in there. And there were also releases of her handwritten notes that other people had that came out in tandem to this. So you could actually read all of her handwritten notes and what she wrote in there that the FBI has redacted. Right.
So this is a, this is also pretty interesting and vital information to see that this was the dossier not only was going to be, it was going to be multi-purpose, but the first purpose was to try to prevent the president from winning the election altogether. If this needed to be out before election day.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's key. Now, what the hugest part of this all is, and let me get to that now, is that this was given. The State Department sent this stuff to the FBI. It was forwarded to them on October 13th, 2016. That's 10 days before the first FISA warrant. So all of the information in these memos that she wrote up of their meeting, which completely discredits Steele and prove he was out on a politically motivated witch hunt, was in the FBI's possession 10 days before they went and swore in front of a FISA court.
Man.
That all of this was good and fine and dandy. Yesterday, Lou Dobbs came out with Joe DiGenova and Victoria Tunsig were on Lou Dobbs. And I'm going to play a clip real quick. It's a very quick clip that I want to play for you because it speaks for itself.
DOJ Inspector. Hold on.
I got to fix this. I'm not prepared. Shame on me. Okay, here we go.
Inevitable conclusions of the DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz, who, by the way, we have learned has concluded that the final three FISA extensions were illegally obtained. The only question now is whether or not the first FISA was illegally obtained. And he apparently, as a result of those disclosures from John Solomon today, which he was unaware of, the Bureau hid those memos from Horowitz. As a result of that, they are doing some additional work on the first FISA. It may be that all four FISAs will have been obtained illegally.
Ooh. Ooh.
That is...
I like the sound of that.
You like that, right? So yes. That led me to basically say... Someone has to be held accountable for the fact that this information was withheld from Horowitz, because if the first FISA isn't ruled to be obtained illegally, who skates, Frank? Do you know?
Tell us.
Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, all of them. That their argument that the predicate for getting the FISA warrant was warranted and based off good information says, okay, well, they learned after the fact that it was bad information, which is why the last three renewals were bad, right?
Yeah, but even then, they still run into problems. When you know, when we have people like Comey on record in January 2017 saying at that point that the dossier was still... just completely unfounded, salacious, unverified, and they had already gotten this stuff approved in the past.
Understood. But there's a big difference between Comey being on television and saying that, or Comey being in front of Congress and saying that, and the inspector general coming out and making a conclusion that the warrant was obtained legally. You know, you look what they did with the mid-year exam report. They completely skewed what Horowitz said about bias. Right? The conclusion is all they cared about. They didn't care about any of the other things in there. So if Horowitz just is about to release this report, as we were told, he releases the report saying we could not find any evidence that the first FISA warrant was obtained illegally. That's it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this is like literally the most crucial piece of evidence that we've gotten so far. I mean, hard evidence that they were told directly by the State Department, the assistant director of the State Department, that this guy was no good. And they still went forward with the FISA warrant anyway. Now, I say that we need somebody held accountable, because Christopher Wray and the FBI just classified this document for 25 years a couple days ago.
Classified it.
Yes, made it secret.
For 25 years.
25 years, which, to be honest, on all the documents that I've read. Now, John Solomon is making a point to say, oh, thank you so much for, you know, you classified this for so long. I think there's a blanket number of years that go on something. Like, a lot of the times you'll see classified until 2041 or 2042. It's just like a default stamp that they put on things. Mm-hmm. But... this just happened. They just classified this a couple days ago. So what the hell is going on? So I started talking last night about who needs to be held accountable for the fact that this information was withheld from Horowitz. Obviously, the people that he was interviewing completely lied to him about what the deal was behind all this. And the FBI clearly had the records available. If they were found in a FOIA request, it's not like they took this bunch of papers, didn't scan them in, didn't have an electronic record and hid them under a bookshelf in the Library of Congress. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I hope the people like Tom Fitton have professional food tasters on staff now.
For real, right? Seriously. Well, look what they did to Bossy this week.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying, like, maybe Bossy is doing some nefarious shit. Excuse my French. My God.
I'm rubbing off on you.
It's bad. I'm getting too comfortable. Maybe he is doing some nefarious, crazy stuff. But it's just interesting that all of a sudden it comes out right now, the week that this stuff comes out, based on a FOIA request that his group made, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying... like, let's pretend Christopher Wray is appointed to the FBI and it's his job to clean up this mess, right? He comes in and he says, if it were me, I would be like, I want to know everything that happened. Everything. I want every single responsive record you can find in regards to this. This was the biggest scandal in the history of the country, an ongoing coup against a candidate and now a sitting president. And... if he didn't want to oversee it personally, then he should have had somebody who was focused on it solely. Because how can you fix what's wrong and broken at the FBI if you don't investigate what's wrong and broken yourself?
Yeah.
Right?
No, yeah, absolutely.
So my argument was that whether he tasked somebody to comply with Horowitz and provide him records, like, they should have been running to Horowitz with this. Oh my gosh, look at this. This shouldn't have been hidden in a drawer somewhere only to be found by the people doing the FOIA request when it was available. And if everybody's lying to Horowitz, he doesn't know to ask for it. Let me have that State Department memo. He doesn't know it exists if they're lying to him.
Man, I hope that this, because, you know, there's a lot of, everybody's always, biding their time and keeping their hopes tempered because, you know, Horowitz is an Obama appointee. But I really do hope that if there's anybody in this country who can see it, and it's happening to him, where they're actually saying, okay, well, I know who appointed me. I know what I, you know, blah, 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 blah. But as far as what I'm dealing with right now, to see these parasites swarm around him and actually try to stifle his own work.
They've been doing that to him for years.
I hope he's done with it. I really hope he's done with it.
That's something that a lot of people forget. You know, he was appointed by Obama, but they did this to him with Fast and Furious, Eric Holder. They made laws and rules so that he would have to ask the directors of the department for records and then get their approval to see them. Like Eric Holder is going to hand over records implicating him in the Fast and Furious scandal, right?
But it's almost like the Chevron deference stuff with the Supreme Court. We were talking about that and all the executive agencies pretty much being able to make regulations that trickle down to us without any kind of oversight. How can you even sell that, the idea that it is okay for you know, bureau and agency directors to be able to have no oversight or to be able to approve what the inspector general
right
gets to see? I mean, he's supposed to be the watcher on the wall. The inspector general is supposed to be the watcher who watches the watchers.
They did that. And then Horowitz spent 2 years, I believe it was just about 2 years. What he did was, instead of giving up, he went through Congress and he pushed and fought for new inspector general rules that would make it a requirement for them to provide these documents or be punished. And he was successful. He didn't give up and he has an axe to grind. He spent 2 years up against the most ridiculous pushback. I mean, I've watched the hearings that he was in. I can't believe the man kept, you know, stayed on. I would have quit. It's ridiculous. So anyway, he was able to get that done. And now my whole point is this. Whether or not Ray knew this was going on, whether he knew that memo or email from the State Department to Christopher Ray or to the FBI at the time existed, the buck has to fall on the person overseeing the process, and that is Christopher Ray. And I'm sorry, I will make no apology for this at all. If we are not going to hold people accountable, what the hell is the point of classifying this stuff now? It's out. Like, you know, I don't. And the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence didn't get it either when they asked for things like this. They held it from them, too. It's just like how they redacted the 80 whatever amount of thousands of dollars that McCabe paid for a coffee table in his office just to protect the FBI's reputation. I don't want an FBI director in there to protect the reputation of the FBI right now. There is rot at the top of the FBI that needs to be disinfected and laid out bare. And if he's just going to, you know, toe the line and just do the same old, there needs to be a change. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. You can't bring any of this into the future. You can't bring everything. I mean, that's like you're finding, you find that your house has mold and you want to get rid of 97% of it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about? The last three is going to become another 100%. You know, it's going to spread. I mean, it's just,
perfect
you have
example.
It's got to be rooted out. It all has to be rooted out.
I mean, I did a scope this morning because a lot of people like came at me for God forbid somehow besmirching director Christopher Wray. And my argument is this: if there's a reason to besmirch him and say, listen, someone's got to take the heat for this. This can't continue. Either you want the truth or you don't. Even if he wasn't involved in any of it, like in terms of overseeing it or he's had a hands-off approach. If I do something, if I'm a manager of a big company and I tell him one of my vice presidents or someone to talk to a customer and make sure they're taken care of, and then the employee doesn't do it, that customer is not going to yell at the employee. They're going to come to me. There's accountability in this. And I'm not going to just not talk about it just because it's more convenient to think that the FBI director should be up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You think about all the people who have surrounded Trump since the time that he took office and all the people that we've watched depart, the people we're checking out here. I mean, even from we're looking at Rince Priebus and Dan Coats and Don McGahn and all the people that we're trying to think of. Well, why are they gone? Who are we know that there was leakers around him. We know that there's people inside the White House that came into the transition team that were covertly trying to undermine the policies that he wanted to push for. I mean, we understand he's swimming with sharks. Why the hell should we trust anybody right now based on anything but their merits? And I'll tell you, the first thing that made me not trust Wray completely, at least at first, is how well he was confirmed. How do you get over 92 votes or 94.5 votes out of this Senate without being, you know, friends of everybody? And that means most of the people you don't like. So, I mean, I'm not saying that forget Wray, he's a crook. I'm just saying why anybody should be so loyal to anybody at this point is beyond me. Wray, he might be duped. He might be, who knows what's going on here. But all I'm saying is that we're not in a position to be, blindly loyal to anybody that is floating around the president.
I agree with you 100%, 100,000%, and like yesterday there was, like I said on my, I said, I'm not in the business, Frank, of declaring who is a good guy and who is a bad guy, right? I'm like, if I've learned anything throughout this process, it's that sometimes people aren't what they seem. And it is certainly not a good idea, in my opinion, to marry yourself to any one theory. Because we're learning more and more. And listen, I'm going to play one more clip right now. It was Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan on Sean Hannity. And we're going to go through that one real quick. And just it's going to feed into why I think that we're hearing a lot of this stuff now and it's coming out. Like the timing of this release, like someone was asking, why do you think that this FOIA release was just granted now? Usually they take about 7 months or so to get you back responsive records. And the reason why they knew to look for this was because there was testimony about it in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee in 2018, I believe, or 2017 in front of the House.
I'm not sure.
There was. It was, oh, goodness. Hold on. I'm going to find it. It was Brian shared it.
Hold yeah, but Jim. In the meantime, at the contempt hearing, Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz. That was fantastic. I saw Mark Meadows appear. What was it? I saw a highlight of him appearing on Hannity or somebody on Fox a night or two ago. Is that the one that you're going to bring up right now? Or is this brand new?
No. It's not brand new. No, it's not brand new. It was Newland, Victoria Newland.
From overseas?
She gave the green light for the FBI to meet with Steele regarding his wild claims about Trump and Russia, according to a book released last week. And then in the hearing, I'll put this tweet in the show notes. In the hearings, they asked her, and she said something ridiculous. So they asked her, hold on, I'm finding it. Hold on. Oh, gosh, I'm so unprepared today. It's Friday. It's Friday. You know?
Yeah, it feels like a Friday.
Basically,
spend so much time.
Yeah, my head's going to explode. I literally got like maybe 3 hours of sleep last night. Maybe.
Why? What's the matter?
Because I was up debating this until, goodness, like 1 a.m. And then I was so fired up about it and like the way it was going down and people's getting so defensive and angry. And then, you know, it devolved into personal attacks, which is so stupid. I just got flustered about it. And I was very passionate about the fact that it's important for us to have accountability and know the truth about everything.
Oh, so you were actually debating this on... like on the internet until 1 a.m.?
Yeah, on Twitter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a late night for you.
It is. I turn into a pumpkin at 12. I mean, at 10, so.
Oh, 10 is when my night begins.
I know. You're crazy. Here's the clip. It's 1:47. It's Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan on Sean Hannity. Ugh, I need volume first, right? What that would help? Volume?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, you ready? For real?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I got to give credit to both of them and the entire Freedom Caucus, including Doug Collins. It was your questioning that nobody knew about behind closed doors that got us a lot more information. And I can't wait to see the other 53 closed door interviews that are coming. Good to see you both. Mark Meadows.
Good to be with you.
It's now beginning to unravel. The Attorney General, it's over. Mueller's dead. It's finished. They can cling as tightly as they want to their sinking ship and their conspiracy theory. But what is coming is FISA abuse, the FISA applications, the rigged investigation into Hillary, the attempt to bludgeon and undo an election, the attempts to steal an election, all now under the purview of the Attorney General and others. Where are we going with this?
Well, I think in the coming days, and by days, I mean just a few days, we'll start to see a lot of this unravel. But as it unravels, part of why you're seeing Jerry Nadler and others go crazy is because they know that the truth is coming out. And for as passionate as they were today, and my good friend Jim Jordan did a great job in that committee hearing, but as passionate as they were today, they haven't been passionate when we've been in the privacy of those rooms. Rooms, asking those questions like Jim and I and others have, they won't even look at the documents because they don't want to know the truth. And Director Comey, he has his day of reckoning too. You know, he says they investigate. We also know that they criminally leak as well. And so it's time for accountability.
If the law is applied equally, do we have to go back to Hillary?
Something's coming, and I don't think it's those 53 transcripts that we're going to get, which I... Whew.
Hey, last night when I went on YouTube to finish up all my uploading of my podcast to everywhere, blah, blah, blah. And then afterwards, I'm just sitting there basking in the end of the day glory, and I see all these trending videos, all the newest videos, and one of them was Hannity from... May 9th. It was last night. And the way that he's speaking.
Yeah.
Then again, he's been one of those TikTok guys for while.
He's not TikToking anymore, though.
No. There's a different look in his eye. And he's using the word drowning a lot. And that is a word I love because it's a word I've been saying they need to be drowned. This cannot, whatever is coming out cannot be a trickle effect. It can't be one breaking story a week. They can tread water that way. They need to be drowned. So I don't know what's happening. I don't have any inside information, but there is only one go time, and it is in 2019. It has to start now, and it has to be fast and overwhelming. So if we're going to get what we want, if we're going to get a fireworks show that we think we deserve, that we know we deserve, it's going to be now. And I'm ready. I know everybody else is, too.
I know. A lot of people are. And you know, there's some people that are like, oh, another delay. And yeah, I know it's so painful that the OIG report that we were just about to get is now going to be amended. And to be honest, I think there will be more criminal referrals involved because these people lied. Lack of candor. Is that what they called it in the McCabe case?
Lack of candor. Yes.
Lack of candor. Yeah.
Condos. Condos.
You know what we were talking about? We make this inside joke. I don't even know if we could talk about it on the show. It's kind of risque.
Okay. Well, you know, that's like right up my alley, so.
I know.
Now right. You kind of, now I feel like you have to give.
I'm going to dangle it in front of you.
You know.
Here we go. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know the scene in Game of Thrones in not the episode of the Night Walkers, but the one before it, or the White Walkers. The one before it where Tyrion is standing with Jaime on the balcony and Tyrion Lannister does like, he says, I was dreaming about this day and I always wished I would die laying in a bed with a glass of wine.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Inside somebody's mouth.
Yes. And the way they say that word on the show,
it makes it sound like it's like, you know, like a dish or something. It's like a dish, like it's almost like it's like chorizo, like like, you know, I'm going to have some onions and rice and some well done. I know what you're talking. I know what you're talking about. It's just that cadence in the voice and the the tone of voice. I understand.
My husband is so funny. He hears us downstairs and he just texted me because we have this joke now. He can't say it any other way. If we come up across the word in conversation for some reason, we throw it in now just to make the joke, you know, like that thing that they use to fix leaks in the bathroom and make sure things are sealed.
Caulk. Oh, that's awesome. That's caulk. Awesome. Caulking.
Yeah.
Caulking.
Caulk. There's all kinds of different colors of caulk. There's white, gray,
green. Oh man, you know, no, I'm right there with you. There's certain things that are said in certain ways that actually transform the word into, I don't know, something unrelated but almost edible. And this is not exactly a word that should be edible, I guess, or it could be, and it's great when it is, I guess. But you know, I don't know. Or then again, this is a quite frankly talk for sure.
It's okay because we needed to break up the seriousness in the beginning, which is very serious, but we have to laugh too. I was reading something on the screen and that reminded me of that, like the way they say that word. And now
Well, can I also just say something that if the day comes, we wake up and we know that the avalanche has started. Here comes the indictments. Here comes the criminal charges. Here comes all of the declassifications, everything. The skirt has been pulled up on this treasonous rat's nest, and it's only the beginning. It's only what's happened in the last 6 years or so. If that all happens, we need to all think, I mean, what are we going to do? Not celebrate somehow?
We're going to go to D.C. for July 4th.
Every household out there that has been following this, I hope they spend the whole weekend having sex and drinking wine. Everybody just live like Dionysus, whatever the hell it is. Seriously, I hope everybody has, you know, it shouldn't be gloating. Just celebrate that you are on the right side of something. That's what I think it is.
I don't know if I'll be able to contain the exuberation that I'll have knowing that justice is finally being served. Not that we were right, and I know that's not what you mean, just that we knew that all of this stuff happened. We knew why and how, and we have been fighting for accountability for years now, and finally it's happening. It's almost like just thinking about it, like I think a lot of people should be doing this. Think about how you're going to feel when there's actual justice for people that have done real horrible, serious things to our country.
Vindication. And I'll tell you the other thing, and not so much we were right or any one or two people were right. When I say we were right in being happy in that, I mean anybody out there who has put their focus in the right place. Put their mm-hmm. focus in the right place, ask the right questions, never accepted an excuse when it did not add up. not excuse things that are glaringly obvious just because it might please you politically in one way or another. For those who put their eyes and their attention in the right place, this, if it all goes well, it'll be vindicating for them. And not only that, but the idea that we are actually going to be able to bear witness to those who are occupying the highest seats of influence in this country, they actually might have to face everything that they've done and take responsibility for everything that they've done and actually take a punishment and not take it. And we're not going to get a moral of the story. We're not going to get a list of crimes, but all the reasons why it would be unwise to charge them. None of that stuff. That means everything for us, because as I have heard very rightfully said in other places over the last couple of weeks and months, is that if this could happen to a president of the United States, then we are just fertilizer. You and I are just fertilizer. If this can be done to a president of the United States who has all eyes on him, what about the rest of us who are just living day to day without media coverage? You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that's like another point I tried to make about the censorship, that like, you know, everybody's always like, oh, it's the big accounts. But like, there are so many small accounts that have been suspended that nobody pays attention to. It's like if a tree falls in the forest, do you hear it? And I argue very strongly that those people are more important than people like me with a big mouth, because they're the majority. So silence 100,000 of those people, and then what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and also to make a big stink about somebody like Sargon of Akkad, who, you know, listen, and it hurts no matter what. If you're on Patreon or something and you were making $13,000 a month like he was, and all of a sudden it's gone, that is devastating. But at least you have more than 500,000 people following you on multiple accounts. People will rally to your cause. You will be able to recover faster than the people who were doing work, that were following a dream, that were making maybe $500 a month. And I know how much $500 a month is everything.
Yep.
Everything.
Yep.
I mean, you're talking about
car payments.
Oh, insurance. My God. Talk about nipping something in the bud. You're destroying the human spirit to try. You're destroying the human spirit to try. And that's exactly what socialism is all about. That's why socialism comes with the controls over communication and the way that we talk to each other. They don't want people making too much. They want to be there for the people who are making too little. It is slavery at every turn.
Gosh, that's so good. You're right. You know who we're going to have on the show on Monday? I'm so excited about it.
Who?
Ron Coleman, attorney Ron Coleman. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
The only Ron Coleman I know,
he's Jewish,
is Ronnie Coleman. And Ronnie Coleman is, I think I don't know how many times he won Mr. Olympia, but he was a massive figure in the bodybuilding community.
I'm sure that Ron Coleman would be happy to take those compliments, but he is not that guy.
Well, now I'm not interested.
Ron Coleman is the attorney doing Gavin McGinnis's lawsuit against the Southern Poverty Law Center and Laura Loomer's lawsuit against Twitter.
Laura Loomer.
Yeah.
I saw her. She popped up on InfoWars the other day. She started crying.
I didn't see it. I didn't watch it. I couldn't.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, you can't tell somebody not to cry. I understand how bad it is, but maybe we can ask him some questions about that.
Yeah, I there could be better ways to handle public relations.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. So I had that to talk about today, and I wanted to talk about Comey yesterday.
This man is so funny. He's so funny.
Do you think so?
Oh, yeah. He's a laugh riot, this guy. He is just a big, lanky doofus. I love his doofus face of his. And it's getting puffier because, you know, he's getting more and more stressed out. Just watch the puffiness under his eyes. This man, he's a charming little Boy Scout doofus, but he is a stressed. He is a stressed string bean over there. He's a stressed little string bean.
Stressed. Don't you dare take my name and apply
bean. Yeah.
I encompass all different types of beans.
All the types of beans.
All the things.
You know, beans cause inflammation.
Good. I like to keep everyone on edge.
People farting. That'll be because of you.
That's what I'm talking about. Hey, Comey says yesterday, what happened?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Comey said yesterday on the CNN town hall that the text messages between Strzok and Page made the entire agency look bad, damaged the institution, and tarnished the Russia investigation. He says, quote, I think given the standards that we have, there should have been and was severe and was severe discipline around their behaviors. Everyone has opinions. Yeah, there was no discipline. Everyone has opinions. You can't bring them to work and have them affect your work. There have to be severe consequences.
No, the problem, James, is that those opinions were pretty much the reason why the work was began in the first place. It's not that something happened and all of a sudden the people you assigned a very legitimate case to happened to be politically biased. You dumb string bean goofy doofus
again.
And then he says that Trump will probably be indicted after his presidency.
Yeah.
When you hear that, all he's doing is saying, ladies and gentlemen, please vote for a Democrat in 2020. That's all he's saying. He's not going to be indicted. Trump is never going to jail. He's just trying to get people to vote in 2020. That's all it is.
Well, if you go to James Comey's Twitter feed and you look underneath his posts, he is equally despised by both those on the left and the right. Equally. Nobody likes him. Nobody. And he can't hide anywhere because he's a little too tall of a bean.
That's right. He's a big Stretch Armstrong string bean of a man. Gangly James.
Gangly. That's a new one. Yeah. Gangly. What are other synonyms for James Comey?
I don't know.
Beanstalk?
I don't know. They should have Jim Carrey play Jim Comey in his biopic on Lifetime one day.
Do you think they're going to do those?
Depending on who wins.
I always used to say biopic. I'm so glad that you fixed that.
Biopic.
It sounds better.
I mean, it sounds a little bit more sciencey.
Yeah.
It's a very biopic thing that they've done.
Biopic. You just blew my mind with that.
You didn't know what the hell it was?
No.
It's a biography picture.
Now I get it. I mean, I know what it is, obviously. You see, there are some things that just fly right over my head.
I'm just like that.
You are?
I'm just like that. I can't do simple math when I'm on a spot. If you put me on the spot or other things there too, I can't do simple math. I will forget my entire life sometimes.
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, I will.
Well, I will. Next story on today's Frantic Friday. Did I say Feisty Friday or Feisty Friday?
Feisty.
Paul Sperry, Real Clear Investigations, has a story out. Who were the Mueller report's hired guns? Special Counsel Mueller spent more than $732,000 on outside contractors, including private investigators and researchers, but his office refuses to say who they were.
Oh, my God.
You know where I'm going?
Yeah, keep going.
Well, it's not unusual for special government offices to outsource for services like computer support, he also hired contractors to compile, quote, investigative reports and other information. The arrangement has led congressional investigators, government watchdog groups, and others to speculate that the private investigators and researchers who worked for the special counsel may have included Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS. They suspect this because the special counsel sent his team to London to meet with Steele within a few months of taking over the investigation. And Weissman shared information he received from Fusion with the media. The report also recycles the general allegations leveled in the dossier and taking a page from the earlier FISA warrants. It cites as supporting evidence articles written by Yahoo News using Steele and Fusion as sources.
Weissman.
God, he's horrible. When are they going to end him? Not literally, but like, God, that
That's not enough. You better bleep that out, because then people could just say, what did she say? What should they do to him?
They keep on Sean Hannity. He keeps on saying Mueller is dead. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, he said that. I'm like, whoa. Mueller is dead. I said, wait, what happened? When did he die? Robert Mueller choked on a chicken bone last night at his D.C. apartment.
Oh, goodness. But when is Weissman going to get the boot from he's like retired now to go teach ethics or something? Like, he's going to teach it. Andrew Weissman. Look. Dan Bongino's podcast the past couple days have been absolutely on fire. And I know that a lot of the people that listen to this show also listen to him. You probably haven't had time, because I know you're busy.
With Dan Bongino?
Yeah.
I haven't listened to an episode of his since last week, but he's one of the episodes I put in rotation, and I make sure that my daily news and headlines podcast playlist is updated with him every day.
Yeah, he's great. So basically what he's been saying is that it appears as though, like, Lisa Page was absolutely stunned when she found out that Brennan had this information also. What Dan Bongino basically is asserting is that all these different agencies used Steele's information but pretended it was from different people. And then at the end, when they found out that it was the same person feeding this information to all these agencies and the media, they went back. Remember when the text messages came out where they said, we've got to scrub these lists?
Yes.
When they found out that it was Steele who was the source for all of it is when they go back saying, we've got to scrub these lists of CIs. I think there may be a duplicate here or there.
Almost like when Cheryl Mills realized that they've got to go scrub some emails, because it was apparent that Obama knew exactly that Hillary Clinton had a private server, because he was talking to her through a burner account as well, just like Elizabeth Carlisle.
Yes, Elizabeth Carlisle. And the reason why they had to go back and do that is because he lied on national television about it. And as soon as that utterance comes out of his mouth, cover up begins.
Indeedly.
The cover-up begins. So they, you know, the other thing that Bongino has been talking about the past couple days is how this new information about the spying on the campaign transition team and or vice president after the election, with the planted spy that was married to Pence's chief of staff. You know that story we talked about where they were in text saying we could, because the woman Seaman was working with Strzok and they wanted to use her husband as a source.
Okay. Now, I guess I'm not as up on this as I thought. I don't know.
So I'll quickly go over. No, it does matter. It's very important. Okay. I'll quickly go over it. So there were text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, and Sarah Carter came out with the story as well as Catherine Herridge, that inside of these text messages, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok are talking to each other about how they can get information from within the transition and how they can put somebody in there that would be, quote, friendly to launder this information back, almost like an undercover agent inside the transition team to provide them with info. And the way they put forth to do this is using Vice President Pence. He had a chief of staff named Joshua Pitcock.
Pitcock.
See, I knew it. There would be a way.
when Ramsey Bolton would say it, and you know why? It's just because when he actually cut off Theon's junk, and he's then taunting him there and eating a sausage in front of him after he had cut it all of his crap off. I think that's just another thing. He would say, go. All right, keep going.
So Pit...
Pit Bleep
was Vice President Pence's chief of staff. His wife, her name was Kathleen Seaman, or Katie Seaman. I think it was Kathleen. Kathleen Seaman. She worked...
Pitcock and Seaman?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry. No, you might want to take all this out.
No. This is staying in. That pair, she worked for Strzok doing the mid-year exam.
Okay.
She's in the FBI. They were saying, let's use Katie's wife, husband to do this. So they were trying to use him, Joshua Pidcock, from Vice President's office, chief of staff, to be a mole for the FBI so that they would have a leg in. In the same group of text messages, they were talking about sending one certain FBI agent back in there and why it might be shady. And what they ended up doing was sending somebody trained in cybersecurity in to do like a briefing for them. And that never happens. They're never assigned to political engagements like that ever. And he was supposed to be the go-to guy because they were going to try to bug things up. And what Dan Bongino talks about is that the Secret Service did a secondary sweep and more, in my opinion, because I've read all about the renovations and everything else of the spaces where these people were because they had information that they were being bugged. So think about that. That's how sick these people are.
I think that whenever this stuff pops up, it reaffirms other things that other times we have spoken both together, apart, on our own shows with people on Twitter and all that, that we know the main players. We know we have a timeline that is almost completely assembled. We have learned intimately all the ins and outs about how FISA works. We've learned everything, where all the money flowed from the political campaigns right through to their legal firms that goes right into the opposition research firms. We've seen all of the major players and all the timelines really come together. But it's still, there's still room. There's still like 3% room to get all of the little minor players we never learned their names before, all the little street sweepers and the janitors that were part of this as well. So it's interesting to see all the tinier names that we haven't heard before just come into play and have the a little bit more brilliantly colored in picture develop before us.
Yeah. And we can end on that one because I'm you know, I think we're good. We've gotten through everything and we've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. I think we're going to get a couple. I'm like nearly convinced that by the time people are listening to this, we'll have a Comey report in our hands or something.
When do you think? By next Wednesday?
Today.
Oh, today.
That's what Joe DeGeneva said. 2 weeks.
Yeah, I saw 2 weeks with that. And then I think it was part of that Hannity clip that I told you I was watching last night. Or no, maybe it was Mark Meadows. It was Mark Meadows that said days, literally days.
We just listened
days.
To that today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We listened to that again. But I heard that one before, too.
Yeah. So that was on the day of the contempt hearing, which was earlier this week, which there's one more day and it's today. So let's get going, people. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast on Feisty Friday with
Stiff Neck Frank or Val. Stiff Neck Val.
I love you. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you have. I love you too. Thank you so much for everything. This is the fun times we get to hang out with each other. Three mornings a week now.
It really is. And being Stiff Neck Frank. We have problems. I hope everyone else thinks this is funny. Otherwise, we're in trouble.
Well, we need something to set us apart.
Yeah, we do. You guys can hear the Dark to Light podcast every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 1 or 2:30 p.m. Eastern on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Monday.
Later.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
In Philadelphia, the district attorney there, Larry Kirshner. So he was on HBO recently and he talked about implementing a policy in Philadelphia where drug possession, if you will, would not be arrested, but more diverted to a diversion program, a drug program, instead of being arrested and having a criminal record. Now, someone asked, was this a political move? I would say yes, but I'll get to that in a minute. But here's what I will say about this policy. In theory, you know, if you go back to the 90s and the Clinton administration, you know, and their tough on crime laws that led to mass incarcerations of prisons, and most of those people that are still in prison 20 something years later because of simple drug possession violations. Is that something I agree with? Absolutely not, because that should be reserved for people who rape, who kill, who sexually assault children, things of that nature. Should you be in jail for life for that stuff? Absolutely. But should you be in prison for 30 years for simple possession of marijuana or cocaine? Absolutely not. But to say that, all right, we're not going to arrest you, we're not going to send you to jail, we're just going to let you go to this drug rehab, this diversion program, to me, that's not the answer. And here's why I say I don't think it's the answer. The problem is, when you give someone who has a problem, an addiction, the freedom to not be controlled, guess what? They're going to go to what controls them, the narcotic, the crack cocaine, the heroin, the meth.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.